Ladies and gentlemen, your conference call is about to begin. Here's your moderator, Dr. Steven Rosen.
Good afternoon, and thank you for joining us today. I am Steve Rosen. As you know, I am the director of the Washington Project of the Middle East Forum, monitoring the personnel and policy development of the Obama administration in the Middle East. And our subject today is the crisis in the U.S.-Israel relationship. It really begins with the peace process. It's, as you know, an article of faith among Democrats and in the entourage around this president that the Israeli-Palestinian conflict is ripe for a solution. And that they believe that what has been lacking until now is presidential involvement. They believe that President George W. Bush was lax in not using the instruments of diplomacy, and that this president, Barack Obama, is in a position to kind of complete the job of bringing about some kind of sweeping end of conflict agreement between Israel and the Palestinians. Paradoxically, they are doing worse than any of their predecessors. This is the first time in 16 years that there are no Israeli-Palestinian negotiations. Really, since Oslo, there's been a steady procession of contacts between every government of Israel and the Palestinian leadership, including contacts at the top, but also working groups of all kinds. And today, these things don't exist. We are now about 15 months into the Obama administration, and it's the first time in 16 years that there are no Israeli-Palestinian negotiations. The administration is putting the blame on Netanyahu, but actually Netanyahu is not doing anything new. The one who is doing something different from the past is really Obama. Netanyahu is being criticized for construction of housing for Jews in neighborhoods of Jerusalem that were across the Green Line, the pre-1967 line, but really all six previous Israeli governments since Oslo conducted construction activity across the Green Line. In fact, the rate of construction was actually much more rapid under several past governments than it is under Netanyahu. For example, Yitzhak Rabin, who is remembered as a saint of the peace process and who won the Nobel Prize for Peace, actually completed 30,000 dwelling units in the West Bank, Gaza, and areas of Jerusalem across the Green Line during his 4 years. He said at one point, and I'm reading a quote, "I explained to the President of the United States that I would not forbid Jews from building privately in the areas of Judea and Samaria." And he said to the President, "I am sorry that within United Jerusalem, construction is not more massive." In 1993, the same year that Yitzhak Rabin shook hands with Yasser Arafat on the White House lawn, during that same year, he completed 6,000 units in the Pisgat Zev neighborhood of Jerusalem. In 1995, he announced a plan to build 15,000 additional apartments. The U.S. administration of the time lived with all this. They didn't love it, but they lived with it because they thought that making an issue of it would blow up the negotiations. That's a quote from the State Department spokesman. So that was true under Rabin. It was true under Shimon Peres when he took over after Rabin was assassinated. It was true under Netanyahu the first time. It was true under Ehud Barak when Ehud Barak sat down at the Camp David negotiations with Arafat and Clinton. He had, at the same time, was building the neighborhood of Har Homa, a very controversial neighborhood, more controversial than Ramat Shlomo, where Netanyahu is criticized. Ehud Barak was building the Ras Al Amud neighborhood on the Mount of Olives in Jerusalem. So really, there is no difference between Netanyahu and all six of his predecessors since 1993, except that Netanyahu is going more slowly. And the difference is that Barack Obama is the first American president who's decided to make an issue of all this. And because he's made an issue of it, the Palestinians are making an issue of it. Today, Abu Mazen refused to sit down with Israel, but this is the same Abu Mazen who negotiated with seven Israeli prime ministers, all of whom were conducting construction in Jerusalem. Abu Mazen, Mahmoud Abbas, negotiated with Yitzhak Shamir. He negotiated with Rabin, with Shimon Peres, with Netanyahu the first time, Ehud Barak, El Sharon, Ehud Olmert. Never before with this precondition that he is setting now. So what's changed is the Palestinians, and what changed them was Obama. It's true that the U.S. objected to Israeli construction in Jerusalem in the past, but not in the kind of confrontational way that it objects today. The U.S., for example, is also not enthusiastic about Israel's nuclear weapons program, but it remains silent about it. If an American president, perhaps Barack Obama, suddenly made an issue of it, the change would be the act of making an issue of it. So we are in a real mess. Netanyahu has actually put a freeze on most natural growth of Israeli settlements. He's the first Israeli prime minister to do so. He agreed to freeze it for 10 months. We've just completed the fifth of the 10 months. There are five to go. The freeze expires in September, and it doesn't look like there's any real drama happening in the peace process. And I do not believe that the freeze is going to be extended. So we're going to have a whole fresh crisis when Israeli construction in other communities resumes in September. We're also headed for a crisis over the issue of an American plan. You're probably familiar that the administration has been hinting that it's moving toward the idea of issuing an American plan. Now, it's really no great mystery what that plan is going to be. It's going to be essentially the so-called Clinton parameters revived and with probably some small changes. They're going to have a very big problem issuing an American plan, because what will the American plan be for Gaza? Are they going to propose a West Bank-only plan? In which case the Palestinians may object that they are abandoning part of the Palestinian homeland? Or are they going to include Gaza, in which case how are they going to resolve the problem that Gaza is under the control of Hamas? So it's not going to be such a simple matter for this and a list of other reasons for them to issue an American plan, but they're moving in that direction. There seems to be a general belief in the circle around the president that the democratically elected government of Israel is some sort of drunk at the wheel, and although it was chosen by the people of Israel and clearly still has the support of the Israeli public, that somehow they can overrule it and decide Israel's destiny here in Washington. And they say they don't want to impose it, but they clearly intend to use some kind of pressure tactics to bring Israel around, or try to bring Israel around, to these American ideas. Well, the whole idea of having a Jewish state was to make a Jewish decision about Jewish destiny, and it's not really believable that the Israeli public is going to say let's have our future decided by some guy from Chicago who's really never even spent any time here and who we don't trust. In fact, one commentator said that Obama may be saving Israel from herself in the opposite of the usual sense. that Israelis take risks for peace when they think they have somebody they can trust in the White House. And since they don't trust Barack Obama, they won't be in such a rush to take risks for peace. Maybe those risks are not such a good idea right now. In fact, in Israel, it's clear from Israeli poll data that the Israeli public does not believe that further withdrawals will bring peace. It's true that majorities in Israeli public opinion polls are in favor of certain kinds of concessions, territorial concessions, if they thought they had an Arab partner that they could trust. But it's also true that by record numbers, Israelis say that they do not have a partner they can trust. The Palestinians who might be willing to make peace have no power, and the Palestinians who have power are not interested in making peace. So Israelis have moved away from the position that they took at some points in the past. As a matter of fact, you might say that Barack Obama's real quarrel is not with Bibi Netanyahu, it's with the people of Israel. If the people of Israel really believed there was a golden opportunity for peace with the Palestinians, they would not allow any Israeli prime minister to stand in the way. But what we have is the opposite situation. We have a prime minister who very faithfully expresses the skepticism of the people of Israel that they do, in fact, have partners who they can have confidence in. So it's not likely that an effort to go over Netanyahu's head to the Israeli public is going to be very successful. Meanwhile, we are getting closer to the finish line of the Iranian nuclear program. They are in their final sprint. We are months or a few short years from them crossing that line. The U.S. is doing a good job trying to build an international coalition for sanctions, but there are fewer and fewer people who believe that sanctions can work. So we are headed for a real mess. On the issue on which the United States and Israel agree, Iran, they are likely to fail in the current policy of stopping Iran through sanctions. And on the policies on which they disagree, Obama is also likely to fail. Obama's confrontation with Netanyahu has gotten some support from his core constituency up until now, because they think it's going to produce progress in the peace process. Whether he will look so good a few months from now when people realize that there is no peace process, exactly because he has gone in the wrong direction, we will find out. Anyway, those are just some opening remarks. I wanted to leave as much time as possible for us to have some kind of an exchange. So, operator, if you could open this up to questions, it's probably a good idea for us to use the rest of our time that way.
Thank you, Dr. Rosen. To join the question and answer session queue, press star 1 on your telephone keypad. I will announce each caller prior to bringing you into the conference. Please remember, if you have your phone on mute, to take it off mute when you are selected to ask your question. Again, to join the question and answer session queue, press star 1 on your telephone keypad. And our first question is from Ms. Nina Rosenwald. Please begin speaking when you hear your line's been unmuted.
Hi, Steve. Very, very good. I'm just concerned about two things. One is, do you think the Obama administration is going to use the American peace plan to divert interest from not doing anything about Iran or have a linkage there? The second thing is, as you say, it may not be popular. This administration seems not to care if something's not popular. When it's not popular, they try and ram it through twice as hard as we've seen. I'd love your thoughts on those things, please.
Yeah, well, Nina, good to talk to you. I agree with you that they have a head of steam about this policy. They have some deep conviction that they're on the right track. God knows why, but that is how they look at it. and it's not going to be so easy to turn this around. I'm just back from Jerusalem, and some of our friends there are in a despondent state of mind because they think that this crisis is going to go on for an extended period.
Mm.
Especially as they fail to get the peace talks started, they're going to redouble their efforts. But, you know, eventually they will do the right thing after exhausting the alternatives. That seems to be the history of Middle East policy in Washington. And we will survive all of this. The real problem, as you say, is Iran, because that is far more serious than some argument over some Jewish housing construction in a neighborhood of Jerusalem. If Iran goes forward with its nuclear weapons program, we are going to be in a new Middle East. Iran itself will be far more dangerous in lots of ways, and it may trigger a cascade of proliferation by other countries, to mention leakage of fissionable material to terrorist groups like Hezbollah and maybe even Osama bin Laden. And we're going to be in a very, very dangerous world. So will Israel be able to act against the Iranian nuclear program, against the wishes of the United States, when it's already in tense relations with the United States? It may turn out that the worst thing about this argument about housing in Jerusalem has nothing to do with the peace process or Jerusalem. It may simply accelerate the day when we're looking at a nuclear Iran and make it harder to do something about it, as you say.
Mm,
so it's very disturbing. I think all of us are downhearted about what we're witnessing here. It's just all so mistaken.
Mm-hmm. Thank you.
And our next question will be presented by Mr. David Edmond. Caller, please begin speaking when you hear your line's been unmuted.
Hello, Steve. How are you?
Good, David. Thank you.
Steve, we've got big trouble with Obama. Everybody, I think, on this call knows that. We also know we've got him for a minimum of about 3 more years. Hopefully it is just 3 more years. Do you think, you know the ins and outs in Washington, can Congress be of any help? Obama's the commander-in-chief. Probably before there is any military action, you know, the commander-in-chief is going to have to order that. Can Congress be helpful, or are we just really in deep doo-doo, as they say?
There are things that Congress can do. These letters we saw in the House and Senate over the last 2 weeks were good letters. Of course, they were also very revealing as to what they did not do. I mean, I think that it's an achievement to get 330 members of the House in just a few days and a thundering response in the Senate almost as quickly. It's really remarkable, and I don't think on any other issue you could organize letters as good as those that fast. That said, the letters are completely silent about the right of Jews to live in Jerusalem. They only talk about the theme of let's not have public quarrels between the United States and Israel. The implication is that private quarrels are all right. And the letters don't say a word about the real issue about which the recent dispute occurred. And they don't point out any of the things that I said about American policy being on the wrong track. So the letters, and why were they such weak letters? The answer is they wanted to have a lot of Democrats on the letters. If the letters had only been from Republicans, they could have been more strongly worded. But for sound reasons, my former colleagues at AIPAC believed, and I'm not criticizing them, I think there's merit in the view, that it was more important to have a bipartisan letters that included a lot of Democrats, and Democrats were not willing to break with the president too sharply. And we're going to face that same problem as we go down the road, because it's very difficult to mobilize congressional opposition when you have the same party in control of the House and the Senate. If the president goes too far, I suppose people will step in. If he were, for example, to start to cut military assistance to Israel, that impaired Israel's ability to defend itself. But we're not at that point, and I think that the Congress is limited in what it can do on a bipartisan basis.
And our next question will be presented by Mr. William Seltzer. Sir, please begin speaking when you hear your call has been
Steve, thanks for a very, very good summary. I have felt that Obama can't really change policy without having some support in the Congress, some significant support, as well, of course, as the State Department, which I don't think that's a problem. But the it's not housing isn't a big issue, even if they win it. It's got to be some part of the pattern of rapprochement that apparently is going on. And I don't know the strength of support for that, and I wonder if we couldn't start trying to change the focus to Iran as more of an emergency or urgency and at least smoke out the support he does have.
Yeah, I think that we need to be ringing the alarm bell, exactly as you say, William, about Iran. And also, I think we should be making the argument that this is hurting the peace process, because the reason that congressional Democrats go along with it, the reason that press goes along with it, is the belief that somehow all of this American-Israeli tension will move the peace process forward. When people realize that this is actually counterproductive measured that way, and that actually there is no peace process exactly because Obama's undermining its foundations, I think that the support for this confrontational policy will go down. So I think that's a point that should be emphasized more than it is.
Our next question will be presented by Mr. Stephen Levy. Caller, please begin speaking when you hear your line's been unmuted.
Hi, Steve. Wanted to ask you if you have any vignettes or reflections on your efforts with the administration.
Well, you know, it's interesting. There are some things going on now that are a little more positive. For example, Dennis Ross's role is being enhanced, interestingly, in spite of the attacks on him that you may have seen. At this moment, Dennis has been brought back in by Mitchell himself, which is a first. And he is playing a major role in drafting a prospective letter to the two sides, meaning to the Israelis and the Palestinians, that's meant to bridge the differences. I'm told by some Israeli friends who are close to the process that it's not a bad letter, and that there are some hopes that this can be used to smooth over the conflict between Obama and Netanyahu that's been taking place. So there are some more positive developments. We're also starting to see the first splits in the administration over Middle East policy. For the first year, they were very unified. And when you have a unified administration, it's more difficult for outside parties to have any influence. When there are factions and splits, then they seek outside allies, and you start to get information that you didn't have before, and you can form some coalitions that were not possible when there was all that unity. And we're starting to see some splits and some signs of splits. There are beginning to be leaks and counter leaks, and there's beginning to be grumbling about personalities, and people are opening up a little bit. They're starting to come out and speak more. This afternoon, for example, General Jones is going to meet with the Washington Institute. Until the last minute, they didn't agree to do that. And Hillary Clinton came out the other day and met with a pro-Israel group. And it's starting to happen more. So I think we're seeing some openness that may make it possible to communicate more effectively. They were really very shut down the first year of the administration.
And our next question comes from Mr. Larry Gradman. Caller, please begin speaking when you hear your line's been unmuted.
Hi. I was wondering if you're in a position to comment on some of the major Arab countries that also have deep concerns for the Iranian missile and atomic weapons, and whether they have influence in Washington.
Yeah, I just earlier today, I had an opportunity to chat a little bit with a senior official from the United Arab Emirates, for example, here in Washington. And he made no secret of how worried they are. When you speak to these guys privately, some of them are pretty blunt. I had one guy say to me that we could live with an Israeli military strike on the Iranian program as long as it succeeds. Even though the Arab official who said this was from a country that has a lot of Iranian exiles and Shiite population that the Iranians might use for subversion against his government. But he said he was willing to live with that if the Israelis could have a successful strike against the Iranian nuclear program. So there is something to work with here, but the Obama administration is not doing much with it so far that you can see. In fact, you hear a lot of criticism from Arab officials that Obama is not taking Iran seriously enough.
Thank you, Dr. Rosen. That was our last question, so I will turn it back over to you for closing comments.
Well, I just want to thank all of you for taking the time today and for being involved with the Middle East Forum. We are trying to find what I call points of intervention to try to turn the situation around. I won't pretend that it's going swimmingly right now. As you can see, we have some pretty serious problems. But we do have some points of contact and we're making a little bit of progress in making people raise questions about whether they're on the right path. Thanks again for being with us today.